My goodness, the world has gone crazy today. So we are in the week of Easter, Resurrection Day, the last days of Jesus on earth. And I wanted to do a couple of passages for you. And I wanted to share these wonderful passages about Jesus and what was going on at the time and some words that he left us with that I think are worthy of reading during the times. I want to read first from paper 180, section 3, on the enmity of the world. And this is a discussion that he has prior to leaving, because Jesus knows at this point that his days are numbered. It's only a matter of time before the religious authorities come and arrest him. And so I'll just read briefly this statement, because I think it pertains to some of the division going on in the world today between those who believe in things like liberty and spirit and truth and enduring realities and true progress as opposed to temporal progress. He who has an ear, let him hear. You know what I'm speaking of. Secularism is certainly having its way in the modern day. So these words from the Master says, "When I have left you, be not discouraged by the enmity of the world. Be not downcast even when faint-hearted believers turn against you and join hands with the enemies of the kingdom. If the world shall hate you, you should recall that it hated me even before it hated you. If you were of this world, then the world would love its own. But because you are not, the world refuses to love you. You are in this world, but your lives are not to be world-like. I have chosen you out of the world to represent the spirit of another world, even to this world which you have been chosen. But always remember the words I have spoken to you. The servant is not greater than his master. If they dare to persecute me, they will also persecute you. If my words offend the unbelievers, so also will your words offend the ungodly. And all of this will they do to you, because they believe not in me, nor in him who sent me. So will you suffer many things for the sake of my gospel. But when you endure these tribulations, you should recall that I have also suffered before you for the sake of the gospel of the heavenly kingdom." By the way, that is an enlarged quotation from the scriptural account that you'll find in John 18. John has about 20% of this, but this paragraph is heavily quoted in John 18. Then we want to turn our attention to this particular paper, and I dedicate this to this year's Resurrection Day as we honor Christ Michael as he wraps up his pastoral life. And this is from paper 186, and it is section 5, and it is entitled "Jesus' Death in Relation to the Passover." And I went through quite a number of different passages that I wanted to pull for this particular celebration event. And for whatever reason, this one struck me as particularly relevant, so I thought this would be the one that I would share with you. And I hope you appreciate it. And it gives us a good reflection on just how rich and how beautiful the passages are in the Urantia Revelation pertaining to the life and teachings of Jesus. So from paper 186, we read, "There is no direct relation between the death of Jesus and the Jewish Passover. True, the Master did lay down his life in the flesh on this day, the day of the preparation for the Jewish Passover, and about the time of the sacrificing of the Passover lambs in the temple. But this coincidental occurrence does not in any manner indicate that the death of the Son of Man on earth has any connection with the Jewish sacrificial system. Jesus was a Jew, but as the Son of God, he was a mortal of the realms. The events already narrated and leading up to this hour of the Master's impending crucifixion are sufficient to indicate that his death at about this time was a purely natural and man-managed affair. It was man and not God who planned and executed the death of Jesus on the cross. True, the Father refused to interfere with the march of human events on our world, Urantia, but the Father, in paradise, did not decree, demand, or require the death of his Son as it was carried out on earth. It is a fact that in some manner, sooner or later, Jesus would have died to divest himself of his mortal body, his incarnation in the flesh. But he could have executed such a task in countless ways without dying on a cross between two thieves. All of this was man's doings, not God's. At the time of the Master's baptism, he had already completed the technique of the required experience on earth and in the flesh, which was necessary for the completion of his seventh and last universal bestowal. At this very time, Jesus' duty on earth was done. All the life he lived thereafter, and even the manner of his death, was a purely personal ministry on his part for the welfare and uplifting of his mortal creatures on this world and on other worlds. The gospel of the good news that mortal man may by faith become spirit conscious that he is a son of God is not dependent on the death of Jesus. True, indeed, all this gospel of the kingdom has been tremendously illuminated by the Master's death, but even more so by his life. All that the Son of Man said or did on earth greatly embellished the doctrines of sonship with God and the brotherhood of men. But these essential relationships of God and men are inherent in the universe facts of God's love for his children and the innate mercy of the divine sons. These touching and divinely beautiful relations between man and his Maker on this world and on all others throughout the universe of universes have existed from eternity, and they are not in any sense dependent on these periodic bestowal enactments of the Creator sons of God, who thus assume the nature and likeness of their created intelligences as part of the price which they must pay for the final acquirement of unlimited sovereignty over their respective local universes. The Father in heaven loved mortal man on earth just as much before the life and death of Jesus on Urantia as he did after this transcendent exhibition of the co-partnership of man and God. This mighty transaction of the incarnation of the God of Nebadon as a man on Urantia could not augment the attributes of the eternal, infinite, and universal Father, but it did enrich and enlighten all other administrators and creatures of the universe of Nebadon. While the Father in heaven loves us no more because of this bestowal of Michael, all other celestial intelligences do. And this is because Jesus not only made a revelation of God to man, but he also likewise made a new revelation of man to the gods and to the celestial intelligences of the universe of universes. Jesus is not about to die as a sacrifice for sin. He is not going to atone for the inborn moral guilt of the human race. Mankind has no such racial guilt before God. Guilt is purely a matter of personal sin and knowing deliberate rebellion against the will of the Father and the administration of his sons. Sin and rebellion have nothing to do with the fundamental bestowal plan of the Paradise Sons of God, albeit it does appear to us that the salvage plan is a provisional feature of the bestowal plan. The salvation of God for the mortals of Urantia would have been just as effective and unerringly certain if Jesus had not been put to death by the cruel hands of ignorant mortals. If the Master had been favorably received by the mortals of earth, and had he departed from Urantia by the voluntary relinquishment of his life in the flesh, the fact of the love of God and the mercy of the Son the fact of sonship with God would have in no wise been affected. You mortals are the sons of God, and the only thing is required to make such a truth factual in your personal experience, and that is your spirit-born faith. And so we'll leave it there, because I'm convinced that is the best way to end this podcast. The true message that Jesus tried so hard to share, the gospel, the true gospel, the fact of the sonship of God. The only thing required to make such a truth factual in your personal experience, and that is your spirit-born faith. Until next time, thanks for joining me on this Urantia Radio podcast.